We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now we get a chance to chat with the newest member, along with Ken Griffey Jr., the newest member of the Hall of Fame, and that's, of course, Mike Piazza. Mike, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mike, how are you? Man?
Good. First, congratulations from everybody here and from, I speak obviously for all the Met fans here and everybody in New York. So everyone's very excited and everyone wishes you congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, man. It's overwhelming, I got to tell you, but an amazing honor nonetheless.
Well, tell me, did you feel this year, did you give it a lot of thought? Were you thinking about it a lot? Did you think this year would be the year? Did you have any different mm-hmm. thoughts about it? What were you feeling as you were getting ready to hear the vote?
I mean, last year obviously was pretty close, and you know, I was getting you know, when you get to a certain point, they kind of give you a call the year before, and they're like, you know, just in case, we'll you know, get your information. And then it was close and didn't make it. So this year I tried to be a little bit just kind of stick to a routine, try not to think about it. And, you know, fortunately it was the case. I think sometimes when you just relax and let things go, they do happen. So it was, but still nothing prepares you. You know, you could be waiting and waiting, and that when they, you know, that moment where they said, if it does happen, we'll call you from here to here. That's probably for me the longest 10 minutes of my life. It was really gut wrenching. It was tough.
And when you heard it, which this year you went in very easily, when you heard it, what was your feeling? What was the first thing that you thought about?
Euphoria, man. It's just, it really hits you then. And then you just start to really think back, of all the times, that you've had and the relationships in the game and your teammates. And, you know, I had this vision of my dad, you know, throwing pitches to me underhand as a kid, you know, when I got my first baseball and bat. So it kind of pulls everything together, and you just go through this, you know, massive, you know, this is your life type of thing. And you start to really become grateful and humble at what an honor this is, knowing, you know, how much we all love the game and how much history there is connected to it.
You know, it's interesting. We're talking about Mike Piazza, of course. The Griffey was the first number one draft pick to get in, and you were the lowest draft pick ever to get in, which when people think of you, they think, oh, you know, Mike Piazza, big slugger, handsome guy, you know, the whole thing. He's had it easy. You were a self-made player who was a 62nd round draft pick and the lowest draft pick ever to make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's kind of overwhelming in a way, and obviously the reasons for that I've got documented many times. But yeah, I mean, and that's kind of a sort of a tribute to the game in the sense that there's so many roles and so many ways that you can come in and players. I think they were telling that John Smoltz was a pretty low round pick as well. So the fact that there's so many opportunities you know, have a career in this game, whether you're pitching, hitting, defense. And for me, once I finally, you know, got behind the plate, you know, with the Dodgers, and I knew, and I always had a quality or talent to hit. I never really refined it until I did get into professional baseball, but that was my strong suit. I knew that was going to kind of carry me if I ever was going to do anything in this game. And it was a question of finding a position. So once I did that, and, you know, the work ethic my father taught me was really instrumental in becoming a catcher and becoming a major league catcher, which obviously was a difficult road.
Your family has been along for the ride. What was the reaction in the Piazza family?
Man, you know, I still, you know, my dad, I didn't get a chance to talk to him today. I talked to my wife, and my wife's like, he's still crying. So he's been crying for 2 days. She's like, he's still crying. My dad, you know, as you know, well, he had a you know, a major stroke a year and a half ago, and we're still very blessed to still have him. So he likes to joke. He goes, "It was my dying wish for you to get into the hall." So he hung on there.
That's great. He hung
around for us. So it's it's very special for him to to experience this as well, because as I've said many times, he's believed in me, at times a lot more than sometimes I believed in myself,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and was a big force for you, and there's no question. We're talking with Mike Piazza. You know what I've found, Mike, is that I don't know if it's the years you get away, but no matter how big a star you are or a big coach, the Hall of Fame becomes very emotional, and you see guys get really upset when they don't get in. I've seen guys get really actually mad when they don't get in and be brokenhearted when they don't get in and then be so overwhelmed. I don't know if it's that you've removed yourself from the day-to-day spotlight or whatever. It's that final thing that's going to happen or whatever. But nobody doesn't really get overwhelmed when they hear this. No matter how storied your career, it seems to really get to people when it's the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and the most interesting thing, as you pointed out, in sense, is hearing all the stories. Obviously dealing with Jeff Idelson and all the people that have been there and run the museum, talking about the stories. And he said, there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance, And a lot of these guys, you go up there for the stories. He says, your fastball gets a little faster. He goes, that home run you hit gets a little longer. So as much as you said, you're right. You do have to have confidence to play this game. But when you start talking about the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, it does take on a lot more of a historical significance, because you start thinking about, the greats of the game and how deep the history is. And I think that's what sets baseball off as far as other sports, in the sense that, the connection to the legacy of the game. So it's something that is very powerful. And as you said, as a player, it is humbling, and it really starts to make you sit back and think about, wow, this is really, really special.
This year, and a lot of us felt it was an injustice the last couple of years that anyone, and a lot of guys are getting damned by innuendo here. Did it bother you that was going on with you and kept you out? And guys were even saying that it was keeping you out. Did that bother you at all over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, of course it does. And that's just, unfortunately, that was part of the era we played in. Like I said, in a perfect world, if you could go back and change things, we would have addressed it sooner to try to clean up the game sooner when we knew it was coming into the game. But, to put it in historical perspective too, we were coming off the strike, and, the players and the owners were not getting along. So even though that was the right thing to do, anything we weren't agreeing on, let alone trying to get the game, tested. So, it was a mistake. I think we knew that we'd made as a collective whole in the game, but we changed that and obviously righted the ship. And, it is what it is. I mean, the game is very resilient, and there's been, unfortunate, scandals and tough times in the game throughout history. As I mentioned, the strikes, the labor strife, there was other controversies in the 70s and all the way back to the Black Sox. So I think, you look at it as a whole, it is a game that's resilient, and the fact that, there is no perfect institution in this world, let alone baseball. So it's something we learn from our mistakes, and hopefully, we feel the game is in a better place because of the learning of those mistakes.
We're talking with Mike Piazza. Obviously, he and Ken Griffey Jr. will enter the Hall of Fame together this year. Two very big stars from this generation. So it will be a star-studded day up at Cooperstown. There was some question, and I know you'll go in as a Met, which is very important to the Mets. Dodgers have a million guys in the Hall of Fame. But you had really almost a complete split. You played more games for the Mets, but you had obviously your younger years and your more brilliant years. But you had very good years for the Mets. You had amazing years for the Dodgers. You were a .330 hitting catcher, which is mind-boggling for the Dodgers. How do you look at your Dodger years versus your Met years? What's the thing that stands out to you about your Dodger years? And then, obviously, what's the thing that stands out to you about your Met years?
Well, as I said before and yesterday, it for me, coming up with the Dodgers, was something I'll always cherish. I mean, when you go to spring training and you see Sandy Koufax and you see Don Drysdale and Roy Campanella and Johnny Roseborough and Murray Wills and Garvey and Say and those guys, and the history of that organization in the sense that, you know, they really prided themselves on their minor league development. We had 6 rookies of the year in a row, you know, the years I was there. So, yeah, I mean, it was instrumental in my development. And, you know, leaving there at the time, it was very contentious, obviously. And it was one of those things that it was tough, you know, coming up through the organization because I always thought I was going to be a Dodger for life. And, you know, they had sold the team to Fox, and it was a very contentious negotiation. We couldn't work out an extension, and I ended up in New York.
And almost wound up with the Cubs.
No, it's true. I went into the shower, and my agent said it's the Cubs, and I got out of the shower, and it was the Mets. So I went to New York from Chicago to the Mets in one shower.
Yep.
So it worked out in the end. And, you know, the story of coming here, and as we've talked many times of, you know, frustrations in the beginning, not playing that well, and the expectations were high, and just the experience I had of able to blocking everything out and realizing, hey, I'm in New York for a reason. I need to see this through, and I need to get it done here some way, shape, or form. And you know as well as anybody, I mean, California was great. It was a lot more laid back than New York City. So it was a culture shock for me. And once I made that adjustment, I think it brought out the best in me. So, you know, I'm very proud of my Met years, but, you know, I couldn't mention without mentioning, you know, I had some great teammates and, you know, Bobby Valentine was a colorful manager, and we had just some characters and guys and the grittiness. And, you know, this was way before the modern media today. So it was it was like playing in a fishbowl here. And when you struggled, it was tough.
Well, you don't remember. I don't know if people remember, and we're talking about Mike Piazza, when you came here, and, you know, everyone knows the story about, you know, they had Todd Hundley, who was very popular, and it was it was a big issue, and Todd couldn't adjust the left field, as we all know.
Yeah.
And he had a fan base and a fan club and the whole thing, and you obviously were a big star, and, you know, that happened, and, you know, at the beginning the Mets said no, and then Mr. Doubleday put his foot down, as we all know, and said, I want Piazza here, and we all know how it happened, and then you're here, and then they have that major deal to deal with. You got a guy who hit 40 homers as a catcher here, and you got to supplant him as the catcher. It was a tough transition.
Absolutely, and that's the lesson that I try to tell people. It was difficult, and yeah, I mean, Todd was a nice guy, and he was coming off, I think, elbow surgery as well, so he was hurt, and they didn't know what was going to happen. And you're right, having both of us here, and then eventually he obviously departed. But, yeah, I mean, it was a struggle, but I got to tell you again, I was blessed to be in the right place at the right time and have a lot of people and teammates that were support. We had good teams then, and so I felt like if I could just do my thing and keep my head down and try to do, you know, say the right things, and it would work out. But yeah, it was difficult. So I think, you know, I could have easily, if I would have stayed in LA, it would have been a lot mentally easier. But I was up for the challenge, and I think at that point in my life, it was something that I needed, even though it was a definite change of you know, cultures. It was a culture shock, but I'll tell you, it was a very exciting time, and we had amazing games with the Yankees. And
oh yeah,
and
you used
I
to wear
like
you
those...
used to wear the Yankees out, boy. You did wear the Yankees out.
I used to like those games. You know,
yes.
I got up for those games, and I saw the ball very well at the stadium, the old stadium, and, you know, those games were a lot of fun. And that's, you know, we were talking with John Smoltz at the network yesterday. And those are the games as a player that, you know, the great players really get up for those games. So that they were, you know, they were definitely that way for me.
Yeah, you know, there was so many. I mean, the Billy Wagner home run. I mean, that was late that first year. Some of those big home runs were just unbelievable. I mean, you had so many of them, and you had so many big home runs, and really a knack for hitting. I mean, listen, you were a home run hitter, yes, and a tremendous hitter. A 300 hitter, which says a lot. A 400 home run hitter, which says a lot. Probably more power to the opposite field than any slugger we've seen. But you had a knack for the big home run. I mean, let's be honest, you did. You always did have a knack for the big home run.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. And that's what it's funny when I see Jay Horowitz, and he always says, "Man, you know," he shakes his head and he says, "You just always seem to, you know, have this knack when the big moment was there." And he said many times, he said after a game, I'm shaking my head saying, "Man, I can't believe you did it." So it's in a way, I had such a great ability to kind of focus and slow the moment down and not get too anxious at those moments. It was just a blessing that I had, this ability that was given me, that I was able to just kind of not feel like I had to do too much and stay focused and not get out of what I needed to do. So it was, that's the God-given talent that I think I was blessed with. I was able to refine.
What made you such a good hitter in your regard? I mean, how would you explain, you know, catches don't usually hit like you did. I mean, you were a 330 hitter in the prime of your career. You wound up hitting 308, which is remarkable. I mean, you, as a catcher, you hit 400 home runs, and you were a catcher. You didn't weren't a guy who was playing other positions. You were a catcher all the way through. I mean, those are remarkable, remarkable numbers. Why were you such a good hitter?
Well, first off, I love to hit, and that's without saying. But I think I was a student of the game. I studied the game. I mean, I studied the Ted Williams and the DiMaggio as much clips as I could back then, and read, you know, all the books. I read The Science of Hitting by Ted Williams, and I knew, his first rule of hitting, believe it or not, is get a good pitch to hit. So I knew I had to have a good strike zone. I knew I had to have a good eye, and I always say, don't swing at bad pitches, because if major league pitchers see that you're going to chase, they're going to throw you a lot of bad pitches, and they're going to make you get you out of the comfort zone. And I enjoyed that sort of sword fight, that battle within the battle as well. It was something I got up for, and coaching. I mean, I learned from Reggie Smith, who with the Dodgers was, my first hitting coach. And he said, "Man, your swing's too long. You're going to get jammed. They're going to come after you, and you got to tighten up that swing." So I had great coaches, and I had people that really helped me along the way. But, I was a good learner. I listened. I really liked to talk about the game, and that's what I don't think players do a lot of today is, after a game in the minor leagues, Mike, we'd sit down and get a few beers and talk about the game. What were you thinking here? What did you do here? Why were you doing this? And obviously those days are gone, forever. But that's how I learned the game, and playing against guys like Tony Gwynn. You know what I mean? I that guy brought out the best in me. I lost 3 batting titles to him, but if you're going to lose a batting title to him, it's better him than anybody else.
It's true. He won so many, and, there was one year where, amazingly, and we're talking with Mike Piazza, you were flirting with the Triple Crown in August. I mean, a catcher flirting with a Triple Crown is just a remarkable thing. It really is. I mean, you were hitting 360-something.
Yeah, I did. That was 97 is the best year I had. And it's funny you say that, because that year we had traded for Otis Nixon, I think at the All-Star break there. And so I was hitting third, and I was at Delano DeShields and Otis Nixon were hitting in front of me. So I was hitting second and third, no outs, like 3 times a game. So, you talk about synergy and guys that have to get on for you. And then, Eric Karros, who was one of, my first teammates in the big leagues, he was just a solid run producer who hit behind me, and gave me good enough protection that I was going to, they knew that if I was going to get on base, that he was a good run producer. He didn't hit the ball to the opposite field like I did. He was more of a pull hitter, but he could drive in runs. And so having guys around you, when Mondesi got to the team there, we had 3 really great bats in that middle. So, yeah, I mean, those things as well made a big difference.
Yeah, and coming to Shea, did you adjust? I mean, when you came to Shea, and Shea was a little weird sometimes, depending which kinds of year and what parts of year and stuff like that. Did you adjust your swing at all when you came to Shea, or did you hit exactly the same way you hit when you were with the Dodgers?
Well, I tried to you adjust in the sense that you – obviously, when the ball's not carrying well, and Shea was tough early in the year. I mean, April and May here, the ball did not carry well at all at night. And when the wind was coming off the water, it wasn't a good place to hit. But, yeah, you adjust in the sense that you try to hit the ball up the middle. And the fact that I hit the ball well to all fields, I was able to, if I was struggling, hit the ball to right field, and not I wasn't a pure pool hitter because those guys have trouble hitting 300. The fact that I just like making contact too, and you know, when I left the game, you know, there was guys striking out 140, 150 times a year. I couldn't believe it, you know. To me, once you struck out 100 times a year, they would send you down. They said, hey, you need to go down and cut down your strikeout.
Now everybody strikes out 100 times, yes.
It's funny, and that's one of my biggest beefs, you know. I mean, I was in Oakland last year, and Jack Cust, who I really, you know, was a nice guy, he took my job in a sense. I got hurt, and he struck out 180 times. And I was just like, you know, when I was talking to Billy Bean, he's like, well, you know, Jack took your job. I'm like, I go, Billy, this guy strikes out, you know, 185 times. So, yeah, and that's how the game is changing, and guys don't care about the strikeout that they could hit for power. It's just, unfortunately, the way the game is today. But, it, you know, it is what it is. But I liked making contact. That was just my thing. I'd rather put the bat on the ball. And the shifts as well. When I look at these shifts today, I'm like, that would be a dream for me to hit.
Yeah, they wouldn't have shifted much on you. I mean, especially with your ability to hit the ball the right field, which was overwhelming. I mean, you're the only guy who hit 400 home runs who hit more than half the opposite field, which is remarkable. We're talking with Mike Piazza. Are you more proud of being a catcher that hit 400 home runs and showed that kind of power, or that you're a 300 hitter? Which means more?
Yeah, I really did get to end my career. A 300 hitter was something that for me made sense, because I never wanted to be just pure power hitter. I wanted to be a good hitter with power. And as you said, you know, some years I had more better power numbers than others, and that was just sort of a byproduct of, you know, maybe getting older, injuries and stuff like that, and not having the guys around me that I had earlier in my career. But ultimately, again, as a hitter, you have to adjust and you have to make the most of the lineup you're in. So there was times where I didn't have a lot of guys on base, and that's when I hit 300. I was like, hey, I got to get on base. Even though I'm not fast by any means, I still needed to take what the opposition was giving me. So I had that ability to do that as well. It was something that I, you know, I prided myself on.
You know, I know you've recounted it so many times. We're talking with Mike Piazza, but even yesterday, people calling, and still, as I don't care if you're 100 or 120, the Carce homer is going to be what people are going to remember, because it just transcended baseball, transcended sports. It was such a special moment that was really almost outside anything that's ordinary. It was such an You know, I was recounting that day yesterday from the fact that we had gone in there, and Mr. Wilpon had called us and asked us to go in there at 11 o'clock in the morning just so everyone would hear us there all day and feel safe, because everyone was still on edge. And everyone was on such edge until that home run, which kind of let the dam breaking. And, you know, I don't care. As long as you live, you're going to hear about that home run. And I know you've recounted it so many times, you're probably tired of it. But people, they just, for them, it's such a mean, whether they were there, whether they've watched it, whatever, it's just such an important moment for them. It's just it's one of the biggest moments, really, in the history of sports in this city. It really is.
Well, I appreciate that. It's so inspiring for me, you know, for people to come up to me and tell me how much it did mean to them. And it does draw us back in a sense that, you know, again, we throw the hero word around a lot. And I say, look, I mean, you know, it's as a tragedy as that was, and as much pain that we suffered that week, and family suffered, of, you know, mothers and fathers and brothers and uncles not coming home that night, it does put your life in perspective. And as you mentioned, in the sense that when you do have a tragedy, any tragedy, you do have to mourn, and you do have to try to heal, because that's what they would want us to do. I say all the time to my wife, I'm like, you know, God forbid I'm not here, you know, just please make sure my kids get their education, you know, please make sure they go to college. That's the only thing I ask of you. And so, I mean, I think we think about that, you know, because that's part of life. But that's an honor. And again, I try to step away, you know, from saying that you know, there was any sort of heroic act. But it is nice and obviously touching when people tell me how much it means. And I was blessed to have a lot of people praying for me, and I think that really made a difference.
Well, it was having been in the building that night, it was really one of the more, I said it's one of the more unique events or moments I've ever remembered, because the crowd reaction was so different than anything I can ever remember before, because it was such an odd game that, you know, it's something that will The last things people say about you, they will talk about that home run. They just will. I mean, it's part of the lore. It's part of your legacy. And now going in as a Met, which is important because the Mets have never had a position player, you know, make the Hall of Fame. So, you know, the Dodgers got so many guys that I think the Met fans, this was really very important to them that you went in as a Met, because the Mets don't have a lot of Hall of Famers. Obviously, Seaver had been such a standard and had the highest, you know, number until Griffey, for people who care about that stuff, that's not really something I worry about. But the point is, you going in and being the first position player from the Mets to make the Hall of Fame is a very big deal for the franchise.
Well, and as you mentioned, too, with the history of coming here and being embraced and truly, you know, coming back, even I think about the last game at Shea and the way the fans were there and the way the fans treated me, you know, this year at the World Series. And it's just, I can't tell you. I mean, it's like... You think about the hat issue for me, you know, it was tough only since that, you know, I love Tommy and Tommy gave me my shot with the Dodgers, but my heart is here, you know, my heart is with the fans here. So, you know, that's just the way I feel. And it is an honor. I mean, especially I talked to Tom a few weeks ago. I wanted to see how he was doing. I knew, you know, he was in the vineyard out in California and we had a great conversation. So I'm looking forward to seeing him and drinking some of his wine. I told Marty Noble, because I was talking to Marty, and I said, Tom, I got to try to get some of your wine. He goes, well, I'm sold out. I'm like, Marty said he got some. I'm like, Marty, how did you get some over me? So I can't. He's got a very, very limited exclusive mailing list. So maybe I'll petition Tom to get on his mailing list.
Well, there you go. Have you heard from, have you heard from people that you hadn't heard from in a long time? Have the calls been coming far and wide since the announcement?
Yeah, overwhelming. I joked. I said, man, I wish I would have changed my number about 2 weeks ago because I had so many calls. It's great. But, you know, the coolest call was, you know, as I said, the night of is a voicemail. I was on the plane, you know, from Johnny Bench, you know, and you get Johnny Bench. And as a catcher, you're like, you know, Johnny Bench, he's the Paul Bunyan legend of catching, you know, just his athletic ability and the big red machine and his ability to hit and throw. So
he's the standard, no question. Yeah.
I mean, you think about it. He modernized the position in a way. And I think, he's something for me. You start thinking about, and Yogi, obviously, you know, and guys like that and being of Italian descent, you know, you think about DiMaggio and Yogi Berra and those guys as well, that is very, you know, just great company to be with.
And then, you know, you, again, back to your father, who was such a big part, being able, and, you know, hopefully he gets to go to Cooperstown this year and witness this, because I know how much, we all knew how much this would mean to him, there's no question, you know, so that he was still here for that, that's great. It really is, it's really, because I know how much involved he was in this whole thing, this whole process from the beginning, so that's great that he was able here to really enjoy that.
No, and to hear yourself, obviously, thank you for mentioning that. And so many of the players come up to me and saying, you know, how much it's going to mean to him as well. And that's what I'm doing. You know, I have a 2-year-old son at home now, and I'm just starting to teach him the game. So I get emotional, you know, when I'm throwing an underhand pitch now. I mean, my son's only 2.5, and he's not quite getting the swing. But still, I'm like thinking, you know, this is what my dad did to me. This is where it started. So I don't know if my son Marco is going to be a big leaguer one day, but, you know, I know I'm going to have to teach him the game and tell him that, you know, this is your legacy. So it's that generational thing is very powerful.
Yeah, but Marco is going to get to go to Cooperstown this summer and watch his dad get into the Hall of Fame, which is pretty cool. You know that?
It's going to be great. You know, and yeah, the families. I mean, I started, you know, late for most guys, but they're old enough now. I have a 9-year-old who's just really, you know, she's blown away. She's like, you know, everybody's coming up to me and saying congratulations. I was like, oh, that's sweet. So it's nice when you share it. Yeah, it's really sweet. And you know what, again, that's what it's all about. And you know, you have to have, first off, the family for me, as you said, back to my dad. He was the guy that took me out every day, and he jokes, he's like, man, I think today I'd be arrested because of child abuse, because I used to make you go out there so much. And he's like, today I don't know if I could get away with that. So he's definitely, you know, the reason why.
Well, I'm sure there'll be a large Piazza contingent there. So, you know what? Enjoy it. Enjoy the year. Congratulations again. And I'm sure we'll see you along the way. It's going to be a busy year for you.
Thanks, Mike. And thanks for all the support throughout the year.
No problem.
And all the fans. Thank you. It's great that we all share this together, and you guys are a huge part of that. So
thanks.
God bless everybody.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks very much.
All
Mike
right,
Piazza, back after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.